him carefully. He scratched his crotch, stared at the thugs, and chuckled. "You boys want to help me scratch this? Got a bad itch," he hollered. Angel started laughing and turned and looked up at the skinheads. You would have thought that Sully and his boys were the most amusing monkeys in the zoo. "What are you looking at, Jose?" Sully demanded. Nayeli turned to Tacho and asked, "Qué dijo?" Atomico relocated his scratching to his beard. He kept his hand dangling loosely over the butt end of his staff. It hung across his shoulders like a barely noticed tool for the harvest. He replied in his Tijuana English, "I don't know what I look at, but I figure it out pretty soon." He laughed. He squinted at Angel. "What are they, brother?" he asked. "I don't know," Angel replied. "I never saw anything like them." "You want to dance with me?" Sully asked, playing to the boys now. He showed Atomico his chain. Atomico made an ooh face. "I know Juan dance with you," Atomico said. "I want break you neck, and then I want go to your house and make babies with your madre."
"¿Qué?"
said Nayeli. "We're in serious trouble," Tacho whispered.
"Oh."
She rose. "Sit down, bitch," Sully snapped.
"I..."
Atomico winced. "You made a mistake, pendejo." Nayeli turned back to Tacho.
"Did he call me a bad name?" she asked.
"Sorry, mija," Tacho replied. She held up a finger at Sully and waggled it, scolding him. "Nayeli," Chava warned. "Mora," said Tacho, "don't start anything crazy."
"They started it."
"What's your name?" Angel asked, still kneeling.
"Nayeli."
"What?" Sully demanded. "Speak English, greaser."
"Qué?"
Atomico demanded. "Goddamned beaner."
"Te voy a chingar."
"What?" Nayeli said. "Watch his chain."
"Shut it," Sully barked. "I see it, I see it."
"I put greasers in the hospital, man," Sully said.
"Okay," Atomico said.
Sully was a little confused. The script dictated that at this point, the greasers begged or tried to flee. Fear. These two were just standing there. Then Angel stood up. Atomico pulled the staff off his shoulder and started to spin it languidly in front of his face.
"What are you, a cheerleader?" Sully said.
His boys guffawed.
"Baton twirler," Jimbo laughed.
"No," Atomico said.
"Samurai."
He cracked the pole across Sully's face so fast it looked like a cloud had passed in front of him. His nose smashed loud as a small firecracker, blood exploding from his face. Angel grabbed Sully and launched him through the reeds and into the creek. Nayeli knee-kicked Jimbo, and he went down clutching his leg and howling. His baseball bat bounced on the ground. He tried to sit up, and she spun once and kicked him in the jaw. His head bounded off the mud, and he wet his pants. Sully came out of the creek, swinging the chain blindly, the blood and tears ruining his eyesight. His homeboys spread out with their arms wide. They were closing on Nayeli. Atomico stood still, wide-legged, holding his staff perfectly erect before his face. He screamed and lunged four times, smack, 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 smack. Sully's scalp parted over his eyebrows, and more blood covered his face. He fell to his knees as Atomico's blows cracked his shoulders.
Angel was moving around like a crab, and he seemed to be bowing to everybody. But when he bowed, the white boys flew through the air.
"Yeah!" Tacho shouted, jumping to his feet.
One of the thugs decked him with one punch. Nayeli was on the boy in an instant, jabbing him in the neck and around the eyes with her nails, striking like a bobcat. He staggered around with her on his back, on his front, up on one shoulder.
"Get her off! Get her off!"
He tried to bear hug her, but she headbutted him. Angel stood in front of Chava and Don Arturo, defending the elders.
"You all right?" he called.
"We've got it," Nayeli replied.
One of his boys turned to help get Nayeli off the kid's back, and Atomico swept the staff across the backs of his knees and dropped him into a campfire. He screamed,
"My hair! Fire! I'm burning!"
His head smoking like a torch, he broke through the bushes and fell sobbing into the creek. Nayeli hopped down. The remaining thugs circled her and Atomico. Jimbo had lurched to his feet and limped, gripping his thigh above his ruined knee. The two friends stood back to back. Atomico made patterns with his staff, swinging it around and around, covering Nayeli's left, then her right. As the three thugs closed in, Tacho and Angel attacked from behind with a frying pan and Jimbo's abandoned baseball bat. The bat made a horrid, flat clang when it hit the nearest fighter's head. Poor old Jimbo. He dropped like a bag of frijoles.
"Aluminum," Atomico noted.
"I prefer wood."
Whap! His staff stung the boy in front of him in the throat. The boy fell to his knees, choking. Atomico jammed the end of the pole into his solar plexus, then smacked him on each ear so he'd remember the day. Nayeli jumped in front of the last one standing. She was breathing heavily, covered in sweat. It dripped off her hair, but she was smiling. That was what scared the boy the worst. The crazy beaner chick was smiling. She licked her lips. She raised her fists.
"Hello, baby," she said.
The boy plunged through the bamboo stand and ran all the way up and out of the canyon. Nayeli turned to Angel and said,
"Do you want a job?"
Chava dropped them off near midnight. Angel was going home with him to shower and buy some clothes. Nayeli couldn't wait to hold up three fingers to Yolo to see her smile. But her arms were so sore from the battle that she didn't think she could raise them. Her legs were trembling. Tacho got out of the car and limped as if he'd been the one fighting everybody.
"Mija," he noted, "I am just too old for this, and too pretty."
She laughed. Atomico said, "I am more pretty than you are." They walked up the little lawn and found Carla. Somebody had set up a huge inflatable pool on the grass, and Carla was lounging in the water. Atomico pulled off his filthy shirt and kicked off his shoes and fell into the pool, sending a big wave out on the grass.
"That there's the only water that grass has seen this year," Carla told them.
"I la vampi?" Nayeli asked.
"Gone with that Satan dude," Carla replied.
Atomico was blowing bubbles underwater.
"Yolo?"
"Inside with the master."
"Gracias," Nayeli said.
"No prob."
Atomico surfaced.
"Pretty thing," he said to Carla as he moved her way like a crocodile.
Tacho stood there watching Atomico and Carla as if they were a National Geographic special. Nayeli stepped into the duplex.
"Yolo?" she said.
She heard it before the screen door had closed. Oh, 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 oh!
She could smell incense. Most of the lights were out.
Oh, oh, oh!
She should have backed out, left right away, but she could not. She moved forward toward the sound. The bed making thumping, squeaking noise. In Matt's room. The door stood half open. Nayeli looked in at them. She watched him atop Yolo. She could smell them. His bottom was pale blue in the window light. Yolo's thighs were dark like shadows. Her feet crossed over Matt's back.
"See, see, see!" she cried. "Mateo!"
Nayeli backed out. She tiptoed to the living room. She stepped out on the porch. She had her hand over her stomach. She put her other hand over her mouth.
Yolo? Matt? And Yolo?
"Hey," Carla called. "You got a call?"
Nayeli just looked at her.
"El Fono? While you were out? Una Carlo?"
Carla helpfully held her hand up to her face, thumb and pinky extended to form a phone.
"Ring, ring," Carla said.
"Hurt me," Atomico breathed. "Break my bones, devil woman."
"Huh?"
Carla said. Nayeli gulped and stepped off the porch. She had tears in her eyes. But really, they weren't children. They were all grown up. They were outlaws. She hadn't staked a claim on Mateo. Still.
"Some lady," Carla continued, fending Atomico off with one hand. "Your tia?"
"My tia?" Nayeli said.
"Right. Irma, is that the one?"
"What did she say?" Tacho asked.
"She was looking for Nayeli. Said she'd call back. She's down at some hotel."
Atomico splashed Carla.
"Te amo," he said.
"Excuse, please," said Nayeli.
"Yeah, she's in a hotel. I wrote the number down. She's here, in town. Flew in today."
"Here?" cried Tacho.
"Yeah, man. She's got the hots for that Chava dude, if you ask me."
Atomico clutched her, and they sank beneath the waves. Inside, Yolo let out a long cry. Tacho's eyebrows rose. Nayeli covered her eyes with her hand. She walked down to the alley to be alone.
"I see," Tacho said.
His shoes were black with mud. The bottoms of his white jeans were a hideous brown. His shirt was torn. Tia Irma had arrived. Yolo had stolen the boy. Tacho said to no one in particular,
"What a day."
Chapter 26. Carla's bikini almost cut Nayeli in pieces. It was so tight on her. She sank into the water of the inflatable pool. It was late, and the sky was hazy. She could barely see any stars. Few cars passed by on Claremont Drive. She thought, "None of them know I'm here." Yolo, her betrayer, was asleep in Matt's arms in his bedroom. Vampi was gone with El Brujo, so Tacho was asleep in her bed. Atomico snored like a tractor on the couch. All very domestic. All very peaceful. She was the only one who couldn't sleep. How could she? She submerged, felt her hair lift, the cold water shrinking her scalp. She came up staring at the vague smear of moon in the haze. The palm tree fronds made awful skeletal sounds. She watched a battered alley cat saunter by.
He paused to back up to the pool and spray it before vanishing in the alley.
"Perfect," Nayeli said. "Just perfect."
She could not comprehend where she'd been, what she'd seen, who she'd met, or what she'd lost. Now that Laosa was here, she was reminded that she was far from her home, and even farther from her true mission. She had lost Yolo, and she had lost Matt. Vampi? Well, in some ways, she never had Vampi. Not even Vampi had a real relationship with Vampi. But now even she was gone with that satanic busboy. She pondered Chava, too. Now that she had found him, would she lose Aunt Irma? To love? Was this whole absurd experience an elaborate dating service for Laosa? Of all the threats of the journey, Nayeli had never imagined romance would be the most ruinous. And now, with Aunt Irma here, would she lose the entire project? There was no way Laosa was going to allow anyone but herself to recruit the warriors, Nayeli realized. She was being demoted, even if Irma didn't mean to demote her. She slapped the water. Her world was coming apart. Pretty soon, it would just be her and Tacho. Kankakee, she told herself. What else remained but Kankakee? When Nayeli, Tacho, Vampi, and that tramp Yolo walked into the Bahia Hotel on Mission Bay, they found Aunt Irma sitting on a couch in the lobby talking bowling with a retired couple from El Paso. She was resplendent in black slacks, a bright yellow top, and tight pin curls in her hair. Her socks were silver.
"Oh, my God," muttered Vampi. "She dyed her hair."
"Shh," said Nayeli.
"My girls," Irma cried, struggling out of the couch. She hugged and patted and kissed them and lifted Nayeli off the floor. She turned to Tacho. "And you?" She smacked his arm. She spied Atomico and Alex the Wizard slouching outside the glass doors.
"Good God," she said. "What is that?"
"Well," said Nayeli.
Laosa gave them a withering look.
"This is what you managed to find," she said. "In all of the United States, you came up with two drug addicts."
Before Vampi could speak up to defend El Brujo, Tia Irma screwed a cigarette into her mouth and marched to the doors. They gasped open before her, and she stomped out to the lurking males. She looked them up and down.
"¿Y ustedes?" she demanded.
"¿Qué?"
"I am Atomico," the warrior announced.
Alex glowered at her and didn't say anything.
"Hey, you jerk," Atomico scolded. "Light the lady's cigarette."
"No mames, boy," Alex muttered.
He lit Irma's cigarette. They stood there, glaring at each other.
"So," Irma said, "you two degenerates got hold of my girls."
Angel, the mechanic from Camp Guadalupe, stepped up.
"Ma'am," he said, "I am not a degenerate."
The other two snorted.
"I haven't touched the young ladies."
"Yeah," said Atomico. "He's after Tacho."
He and El Brujo laughed and slapped hands.
She inspected Angel. A nice, clean boy. Muscles like cantaloupes.
"You're not much," she said.
"What's your name?"
"Angel."
"That's a pimp's name," she said. She blew smoke at him.
"Have you even reached puberty yet?" she asked mildly.
Frightened by Laosa, Angel retreated and lurked in the shadows.
Irma smoked her cigarette.
I am Alex.
Do tell.
I am Vampi's man.
Irma barked out a laugh that turned into coughs. She spit. At the wedding, she cooed, will you both dye your hair purple? El Brujo fired up a smoke and squinted at her through the smoke.
That's not a bad idea, Auntie, he replied.
Good heaven in Christ, she said. And what about you, stick man?
He showed her his staff.
I am your protector. Who are you marrying?
Nell, Esa.
What?
He said no, Alex explained.
Why didn't he just say it, then?
La mera neta, Atomico blurted, meaning absolutely nothing to Irma.
Baby, he said, I'm only married to freedom. I'd better get back inside, she said, before you degenerates give me a heart attack.
Nayeli knocked on Chava's door again. Don Chava, she cried.
Go away.
It's me, Nayeli.
I know who it is.
Let me in.
I'm not home.
Open the door, Don Chava.
Are you alone?
El Brujo is waiting downstairs.
But she... Is she with you?
No. But she has sent me. After a moment, she heard him rattling the chain and throwing the bolt. He cracked the door open and peered out at her.
She did?
I'm afraid so.
But... he stammered. I am so old.
Nayeli was startled to see he was wearing flannel pajamas. His face was unshaven. His hair stood straight up on his head.
She is older, too, she reassured him.
What am I going to do? He asked.
Nayeli said, You are going to have to buck up, Don Chava. He led her in.
You must shower, she said. Get a clean shirt and comb your hair. Shave.
Yes, Nayeli. She sat on his plastic-covered couch and idly flipped through his Mexican Reader's Digests, called Selecciones. After his shower and shave, he appeared in gray slacks and an undershirt. He wore black socks and had his feet shoved into slippers.
That's better, she said.
He sat across from her at his little table, looking as miserable as any man she'd ever seen.
I know you are worried, she said. I understand the romantic tragedies that have separated you, but La Osa is on a mission. You must help her now and worry about the past later.
Help her? Me? How?
I must go to find my father. You must help her recruit the rest of the seven.
She wrote down the name of the hotel, Irma's room number, her telephone number. Chava Chavarin simply stared at the paper. In a small voice, he said,
I will try.
There is no trying, Nayeli said, sounding like her aunt and liking it. There is only doing.
Before Nayeli left, he handed her his gas card and $300 he retrieved from under his bed.
Gracias, she cried.
Go with God, he said, kissing her forehead.
You too.
You'll need God more than me, she said.
Irma was deeply appalled to learn that La Vampi had promised Alex full control of the Cine Pedro Infante for one night each week.
Heavy metal concerts? She gasped. In tres camarones? Are you crazy?
Her idiot girls had come to San Diego and handed over the world to these refugees. That goody two-shoes Angel believed she could get him a mechanic shop. No doubt Chava Chavarin would expect a dance studio to run.
Oddly enough, she took a shine to Atomiko. He had immediately become her bodyguard, and he scowled in the corner of every room over which she presided. Irma invested in a conference room on the ground floor of the Bahia, ordering a pair of long tables and several chairs. Here, she, Chava Chavarin, if he ever showed some spine and revealed himself, and Yolo and Vampi would interview applicants for the remaining four openings. Just like a business, as it should have been handled from the start. All this romantic twaddle. Ha! That was no way to run a government operation. Laosa could not convince Atomiko to come to Sinaloa. He was adamant. Too bad. If she washed him and bought him clothes, he could be the town's first new policeman. She provided Nayeli with a Bank of America debit card for her foolish jaunt to Kankakee. "Do you think," she bellowed, "that I am simply a provincial rube? You don't think I have resources?" And, "Men are no good."
"My father is good."
"Your father is a dog like all the other dogs."
"I will prove you wrong."
"You will prove what you prove."
"What does that mean?"
"It means what it means."
"I..."
Matt had laid out his road atlas on the kitchen table at the duplex. "You can't go up I-5, he told them. "The Border Patrol checkpoint will nab you for sure."
"Ay, Mateo," Yolo marveled. He was so wise. She rubbed his arm. When her hand rose to his shoulder, he lay his cheek against it.
Yolo's face announced, "I win." Nayeli sneered. "Kankakee, man, that's pretty far," Matt said. Angel and El Brujo were outside, tuning up the minivan, putting in fresh oil, adding coolant to the radiator. "But you go up 15, see here? You've got to go to Vegas." "Vegas!" Carla crowed from the couch. "Oh, for sure!" "Right," said Matt. "It's awesome," she enthused. "After Vegas, you keep heading north, dude. The Virgin Gorge is awesome. Then watch for St. George, Utah, all right?" Tacho was taking notes. "It's totally easy. Up past St. George, you hit I-70 East. Bro, just keep on trucking." "Truckin'," Tacho said. "T-ruckin'," Carla chirped. "T-ruckin'?" Tacho mouthed to Nayeli. "Trip out," Carla said.
"Trip," said Tacho.
Of course it was a trip. What did they think it was?
"Es un viaje," Nayeli said to him. "Like opium."
Tacho looked at the map again. "Oh," he said. "That kind of trip." "Totally," Carla added. I-70. They'd ride that sucker all the way across the Colorado Rockies and the Midwest Plains to Illinois. But they had to promise, swear to God, they'd zoom up to Estes Park in Colorado and check out Rocky Mountain National Park.
"What's there?" Nayeli asked.
Carla got up and stretched. Nayeli could hear her back popping. "Mountains," she said.
"God's country," Matt promised.
When Tacho and Nayeli pulled out the next morning, everybody was still asleep. Chapter 27. The morning light was red. Interstate 15. Only the two of them in all that distance. Their drive to Las Vegas through the American desert was vividly dull. Dead gas stations. Outposts of "I don't want to live here" sat in ruin beside the road. Border patrol trucks puttered ignored around the off-ramps as Mexicans in wasted cars passed them in reeking clouds of oil smoke. The dense brown cloud of Los Angeles exhalations felt its way out across abandoned drive-ins and peeling ice cream stands. White men in pickups with ear-flapping big dogs in the back. Old trailers faded to white. Industrial buildings and dying palm trees, alkaline flats and military bases. Vast blacktop lots of abandoned RVs. The pale boxes arrayed like iron cows in a feedlot. Small triangular flags in vivid plastic colors rattled in the endless wind. And rocks, rocks, piled upon rocks, whole hillsides of nothing but rocks. Brown birds lined up on telephone wires like beads on a cheap Tijuana necklace. Nayeli had Matt's old Spanish-English dictionary. Bañera, bathtub, she studied. Barbecho, fallow land. The Spanish word was new to her, she was embarrassed to admit. She gestured out the window and proclaimed, Barbecho. The air conditioner cut their engine power till they climbed at a crawl, so they sweltered on the way up hills and punched it back on when they dropped. The minivan rattled and groaned on the grades, both up and down. On the radio, they heard many angry Americans with loud voices saying Mexicans were unwanted and immigrants carried disease and harbored terrorists. English only, the AM shouters boomed. English was the official language of America. What did he say? Asked Nayeli. Nada, said Tacho. On the next station, a woman doctor thought her caller should dress in skimpy black lace to seduce her husband instead of the hairdresser she had a secret crush on. What? Said Nayeli. Tacho shrugged, hit the radio buttons. Country music, talk radio, El Rushbo, Jesus, country music, sports, talk, Hannity, Jesus, country music, Norteño, news talk, Jesus. Tacho turned off the radio. Nayeli observed the land in its splendor. 7-Eleven, Subway, Motel 6, 7-Eleven, 24-hour adult superstore, 65 miles per hour, 7-Eleven, 29 Palms, Carl's Jr., 70 miles per hour, Super 8, 7-Eleven. Numerology reigned in Los Unaites. The desert, Nayeli said after an hour of silent staring, is so harsh. Tacho shrugged with one shoulder. He was shrugging a lot lately. He was thinking about Tijuana, about Rigoberto's magic teapot. The deserts of Mexico, he boasted, are more brutal. She stared out her window. She thought she could see a concrete dinosaur in the distance. Bikers screamed around them and flew down the road, laughing skulls on their backs. Crows bent to flattened animal carcasses in the road. They seemed to be bowing to the tatters of rabbit fur, the skunk tails. The midday's light was white. Matt had told them to get off the road at Baker, California. They'd find it, he promised, right before they crossed into Nevada and really began their cross-country jaunt. They'd know it, he laughed, by the world's biggest thermometer. Don't worry, he told them. There's a sign if you don't see the actual thermometer. Tacho could not comprehend what was so funny about it. He hadn't been in the United States long enough to have seen the Jolly Green Giant statues, the jackalopes, or the giant Indian arrows sticking out of in the sides of highways. He did not know that Matt was proud of the world's biggest thermometer in a way that equaled patriotism. Who could have understood that, say, a cement statue of Babe the Blue Ox with a garden hose running through his penis so he peed a constant stream outside a roadside diner was sacredly American? In Mexico, such things would have been shot to pieces, or stolen, or a family of beggars would have moved into the hollow centers of these attractions and made room for their pigs as well. He pulled off the road at Baker. Graffiti on a pink stucco wall. Captain Beefheart slept here.
¿Qué es eso? Nayeli asked.
It is a mystery, Tacho muttered. He was bored with the USA. No, the giant thermometer did not impress Tacho. He had to admit, though, the running fat man on the Bun Boy sign was pretty funny. Matt had told them to stop at the Mad Greeks for the best milkshakes in California. Nayeli had a date shake, Tacho eggnog. Matt had told them it would taste like rompope, but it did not taste like rompope. Maybe if you poured 4 or 5 shots of rum into it. Ma Johnston's minivan offered more than enough room for just the two of them, but Nayeli had plans to fill the extra space. She would, she still believed, not only find her father in Far Kankakee, but convince him to return to Tres Camarones, and they'd need the room for his luggage, maybe some of his smaller furniture. A color television would be nice. And while Tacho had his doubts about the project, she was his girl. What could he do? Just drive. Drive. Drive some more. Then, when he got tired, relieve that by driving for a spell. And there would always be driving to do. One thing was obvious. Los Unaites was much too big. He was crossing a distance the size of a small Central American country just to get to Pinche Las Vegas. No wonder Americans seemed crazy to everybody else. They were utterly alone in the vastness of this ridiculously immense land. They all skittered about, alighting and flying off again like frantic butterflies. Looking for what? What were they looking for? What was in Las Vegas? And really, what was the big deal? Why couldn't they just sleep at the Bun Boy? But no, Matt had insisted they plow through to Las Vegas. First off, what a joke. The place was called Vegas? Fertile Plains? Nothing outside but dead lizards and black highways glittering with a million busted beer bottles. Nayeli had been moody ever since Yolo rode the pony at Matt's. Tacho sighed. Not easy to strike up a conversation with Miss Heartbreak. He tossed his milkshake into the trash. She daintily got out, minced to the barrel, and gently dropped her half-full cup in the garbage can. He hated it when she played the girly girl. And now she was watching her weight, too. She got back in without a word, and he got back on the road. It was already late afternoon. Tacho was amazed and delighted to see an RV ahead pulled off the side of the road and going up in flames. Massive billows of black smoke roiled above the burning machine. A small group of Americans stood about 40 feet away and stared intently. They seemed to believe a revelation was at hand. Tacho passed them slowly, gawking like all Mexicans are compelled to do when a catastrophe ruins someone else's day more than their own. Nayeli seemed to be reciting a prayer. Tacho felt guilty that he wasn't more spiritual, but he still craned his neck to see. They flowed into some crazy, glittering Nevada border town that seemed to have a roller coaster going over the highway. Parched sand.
Nevada? Nayeli said. They call this place snowy?
They laughed.
Tacho said, maybe it melted.
Tonight, Gallagher. Casinos. Loose slots. The largest building looked like some kind of big boat.
Bonnie and Clyde's death car.
We saw that movie, Nayeli said. She noted a prison on the desert slope above the electric town.
How odd it must be, she said, to lie in your bunk and stare across the miles of sand at all the free people having fun.
Yeah, like the people in Tijuana looking over the fence.
Tacho, Zapatista provocateur. They stopped for gas and paid with Chava Chavarin's gas card. It was a family project, no doubt about it.
It rained about an hour as they headed deeper into the desert. As dark fell, they saw the vast flat hardpan on either side turning purple with a thin layer of water running to either horizon. They could have been on the causeway at Guaymas that they'd crossed on the Tres Estrellas bus heading north. The evening light was violet.
And then, Las Vegas.
Nayeli would always remember it like this, in capital letters. It exploded out of the dark plain, a twisted nest of neon and lightning, black pyramids shooting beams at the moon.
There's your bright lights, girl, Tacho said.
At first, she couldn't stop laughing. It was as absurd as her childhood fantasies of dream cities. It only lacked flying carpets and gassy airships. Baffling, winding streets through glitter canyons were interrupted by whole blocks with ceilings of light. She pointed at an eye-aching electric sign that cried, Celine Dion! Hundreds of fun-seekers wandered in the night, grimly hilarious. When they stopped at a red light, a man came by and handed Nayeli a flyer with color pictures of writhing naked women and an 800 phone number. She showed it to Tacho.
Viejas feas, he opined.
They parked behind a giant sphinx and were shoved along the street with their heads rotating and their mouths open. A plaster Elvis stood on a sidewalk. Chubby women in glittering clothes clutched it as their husbands in plaid shorts and golf hats snapped pictures. Nayeli took Tacho's hand. Down the street from Elvis, a white gorilla statue. Apropos of nothing they could see.
Tacho bought a cardboard camera and made Nayeli take pictures of him being carried off like Fay Wray. They skipped. They ran. They stumbled through glass doors and into caverns of billions of ringing bells and tolling electric bongs. Old ladies bent to the one-armed bandits. Coins dropping everywhere. Kalink, kalink, kalink. Into cardboard buckets. They found out how to get coins, and they immediately lost $75.
Tacho, inflamed with slots fever, something awful, peeled open his money belt. Nayeli almost fell over when she discovered his hidden stash. He marched her to a change-making cage and placed a stack of quarters in her hand. She won $35 on a slingo game. He fed quarters into a machine until he caught a break. Three cherries. Bong, bong, bong. Lights flashed. The coins fell out of the machine.
I won! I won! He shouted. I won $50!
For which, Nayeli reminded him,
You paid $125.
I'm on a streak.
Let's go.
But I'm hot right now.
Vamanos.
Out. Into the street. Into a bizarre little curio shop that sold cactus planters in the shape of clowns with droopy trousers, and the cactuses thrust up rudely from their open flies. Tatcha was astonished to see they also sold small wind-up mechanical penises on feet that hopped around on the table. "Popping peckers," the sign said.
"Don't worry," Tatcha advised Nayeli. "The real ones are bigger than that, though they don't have wind-up keys."
Nayeli dragged him out.
"We could get one for Yolo," Tacho suggested.
She did not find it funny.
They retrieved their minivan and wandered around until they found the tawdry little plasterboard-walled motel Matt had reserved for them on the wrong side of the freeway. Even here, slot machines blinked in the forlorn corners of the lobby. They signed in as Shakira and Ricky Martin. The spangled woman behind the counter didn't get the joke. Cardboard holders beside the front desk were stacked with flyers and pamphlets, the colorful headlines of which read, in progression, "Free, free, free, free!" In the all-you-can-eat diner next door, short, chunky Mexican men and downtrodden Vegas retirees slumped over their plates of mashed potatoes drowned in gray gravy. Straw cowboy hats and big gimme caps were greatly in evidence. Nobody talked. After supper, up in their room, they opened the curtains and stared at the insanity for a while, then collapsed into their beds. The cable television featured a Latino news program with disturbing videos of gang violence, semi-naked women, and burning human bodies. Tacho switched around until he found an American show featuring a vampire detective. He reminded himself to tell Vampi about it. Nayeli pulled the blankets up to her chin. She said, "Tacho, are we ever going back home?" He was quiet. He turned off the TV with the remote. He lay back. "I don't know," he confessed. When Nayeli fell asleep, he snuck down to the lobby and pulled the handle on a slot for an hour, but he didn't win anything. The morning sun was a vicious, ochreous blast. They bought cheap sunglasses and could not believe that in the light of day the electric wonderland of the night before was just a big pile of ghastly cement and cracked sidewalks. Fortified with McDonald's coffee and hot cinnamon rolls, they left Las Vegas, headed northeast, buzzed by snarling jet fighters on strafing runs, bombed by strung-out long-haul truckers on their way to Denver or Salt Lake. As soon as you escaped the island of neon and cement, the whole world was charred ruins, hoodoos and spires, dust devils and drooping power lines. Shreds of truck tires like fat black lizards. Smears of fur and brown blood upon the blacktop. Quivering heat waves suggesting spills of mercury on the distant horizon. They crashed into tumbleweeds, puzzled over signs that said high winds may exist, and later, eagles on roadway. Thinking about Tia Irma in San Diego, speeding on to Greater America. Chapter 28. Tacho found a station on FM playing oldies. Donovan sang, "First there is a mountain, then there is no mountain, then there is." Nayeli understood every word of the song. She loved it.
It reminded her of the strange Zen sayings of Sensei Gray back home. She found herself missing his dojo, missing the smell of the morning, the iguanas, and crazy little Peppino and his rusty bike.
"I miss mangoes," she said.
"I miss hair gel," Tacho replied. "Do you have any?" She shook her head and ignored him. Mountains loomed beyond St. George, the golf courses below insanely verdant in the violent desert morning. Nayeli bought chocolate donuts at the gas station. She asked Tacho,
"¿Quién es St. George?"
"¿Quién sabe?" he replied. "George Clooney?" He was enjoying pumping gas. It was so butch. He wore a black tank top, and he felt that his muscles looked chiseled this morning. Didn't he kill a dragon or something? Nayeli looked it up. Dragon. Dragon.
"We are more alike than we think," she lectured.
Utah. Beside a cemetery, a sign that read, "Taxidermy." Nayeli translated it with Matt's dictionary. They laughed for 20 miles. They drove toward a crumbled vista of landscape. The horizon made it look as if the ground were rising before them. They were on the port side of the Markagunt Plateau, but didn't know what it was. They passed Washington, Leeds, Cedar City. They were soon into strange place names. Enoch, Parowan, Paraguna. "They sound like Star Wars planets," Tacho noted. The severe plateau loomed in the distance. They had never seen such big trucks. 18-wheelers pulled double and triple trailers. They hit beaver. "What is a beaver?" Tacho asked. Nayeli worked her dictionary.
"Es un castor," she explained.
"Un castor? Un castor? Out here, in this desert?" Tacho was lodging complaints with the cosmos. 30 or so miles north of the legendary beaver, they came upon the I-70 turnoff. Salina, Utah, had dire warnings. "Last services for 70 miles, and last gas here." Tacho said it in Spanish to the attendant. "Salina." And the attendant corrected him. "Salina." "This is America, bud," he offered wisely. They filled up. They ate ham sandwiches. Tacho tried a Mountain Dew and spit it out. Nayeli took the moral high road and drank orange juice, her every sip scolding Tacho with health. They plunged over the end of the Wasatch Plateau, dropped into the heat, surged across the bottom end of Castle Valley, over the San Rafael Swell, along the flank of the San Rafael Desert. Ahead, nothing but sun. Rolling in for more gas and relief from the seemingly endless emptiness of the freeway, they made a tactical error in Green River. The Green itself flowed silently east of town, cutting jade and cool between junkyards and old buildings. Nayeli gawked at a yellow raft full of red, muscular Americans as it made its stately way toward Moab, the craft passing under I-70 and then consumed by sparkles and reeds and short bluffs in the light. The air was so dry the inside of her nose stung. Nobody laughed in the gas station. It made her nervous. She had been noticing that America was a country where everybody was a comedian. The Americanos had this way of saying sardonic or even outrageous things to one another, and they tipped their heads or raised an eyebrow, and great rolling chortles overtook the crowd. She had seen strangers in lines yell some absurd phrase at other strangers, and the grannies in their vivid Mickey Mouse shirts would shriek in delight, and men would guffaw and adjust their beanie caps. But in Green River, she saw stringy men in faded shorts. She saw dusty four-wheel drive trucks and jeeps. Crows, but no laughter. The station attendant just looked at them and said nothing. ZZ Top coming out of the radio, falling flat on the dry soil. They made their way to a Mexican restaurant. They were so nostalgic and homesick that the thought of chorizo or chilaquiles or tacos made them swoon. They banged in through the door and were greatly relieved to smell Mexican steam. Frijoles and garlic and tomatillos and rice, onions and chicken and lime and salsa. "We're home," Nayeli said to Tacho. They took a seat, and the cook, a Mexican man peering out from the kitchen, called, "Welcome, amigos."
"Hola," said Nayeli.
"Buenas tardes," Tacho called. The waitress came to their table with two menus and two glasses of water.
"Ay, gracias, señora," Nayeli sighed.
The woman looked at her and walked away. Nayeli assumed correctly that she was the chef's wife. She returned in a moment with a plastic bucket of tortilla chips and a plastic bowl of salsa.
"Gracias, señora," she said.
The woman said, "We speak English here." Nayeli blinked at her. She watched her go to the kitchen and speak to the chef. He looked at them over the serving counter.
"¿Qué dijo?"
asked Tacho, gobbling chips and salsa like a starving prisoner.
"She told me to speak English."
"Vieja fea," Tacho said. The woman returned. "Can I take your order?"
"Number 3, please,"
Nayeli enunciated in her best English. "Red chili or green chili?"
"Red."
"And you?" Tacho leaned back in his seat.
"Pues, se me antoja pura machaca, con frijoles caseros."
The woman didn't seem amused by his insolent tone. She wrote on her pad, walked away. Tacho called, "Una coca, por favor." She brought a can of Coke.